Yes. Hi. Thank you so much. I am so, so psyched to be here and to tell you a very interesting story, I hope, today about this thing here, a children's smartwatch, specifically one from the manufacturer called Explora. And these smartwatches are usually sold to parents offering promises of safety and security. And if we look into what the actual function of this watch and this app looks like, we can see, for example, that I can locate my child, and I can see where it's currently hanging out. And then I can also send my child text messages and say, when will you be home? And then my kid can receive that on the watch and can say, no. Good luck. And send me this cool emoji. So that's what we are working with here. And this presents a problem. Because for the purposes of this talk, we are a child-eating witch that lives in the forest. And now, in the past, children just used to wander to our oddly constructed hut in the forest, and we could eat them. But nowadays, this is becoming a lot more difficult because all of these children are running around with smartwatches that tell their parents their location at all times. And so if we want to keep with the times and not starve to death, I think we have to do some research on who's behind these watches, who is our enemy here. And it turns out this is Sten Kirkbak, that's the founder of Explora, a Norwegian guy who founded this company some years ago. This is what he looks like when he's selling to investors. And things seem to be going rather well for him and for Explora. They have been launching an exclusive collab with major German soccer clubs just a couple months ago. And they are also being sold by major telecommunication providers in bundle deals together with your data contract. And if we look at their internal investors' reports, we can also find this very interesting excerpt where they say that they estimate that in their home country of Norway, where they have their strongest and longest standing, about every fifth child from the age of 4 to 10 is using an active Explora subscription. That's a lot of children. And if we browse this investors report a bit further, we can also gather some intel, do some OSINT collection, and we'll find out that in 2018, the company started out in an exclusive supplier relationship with a company called Chiho 360. Now, Chiho 360 is a Chinese IT security company. They do antivirus, and for some reason, they also do children's smartwatches, and they also sell their own smartwatches domestically in China. Now, interestingly, if you look them up, you'll find that not only do they have a controversies section on their Wikipedia page, they actually have an entirely dedicated page. And when I was researching this, I was delighted to find out that they really stayed true to their reputation, because just last year, they were involved in an entirely new controversy where an AI chatbot that they slapped onto their domestic Chinese children's smartwatches turned out to be really racist sometimes. Who would have thought? And then this sort of reputation, I feel like, has rubbed off a bit on Explora in the past, when in 2020, some researchers at Mnemonic found security issues in Explora's watches, where you could basically send specifically crafted SMS messages to a device to enable a backdoor and turn this into a listening device, which at the time made this watch very illegal to sell in Europe. And if we compare the images from these two blog posts, we can also very nicely see that the hardware that is being sold here by Chiho domestically in China and by Explora in Europe in the US is identical at this point. And I would like to think that this whole deal was a bit of a wake-up call for Explora. I have no way of telling that this is true or that's at all related, but in 2023, again, going from the investors report, they switched over to a new hardware platform that might be a fresh start to build a more secure system, right? And to me, it seems like in this move, they also moved a lot of the firmware development in-house to Norway. And now, in good cybersecurity fashion, the only thing I have behind this assumption is a misspelled string in their API, which happens to neatly match the Norwegian spelling of the word incoming. And so that felt like a hint. So what we have there at this point is something that could be kind of cool. Because I'm not convinced that my child needs to run around with a GPS tracker all the time, and I think a lot of you aren't either. But I see that there's a lot of parents out there who have come to expect this. And so if there's a market for it, I would love for there to be an independent European company that is not part of the big tech corporations and that takes this privacy and security super seriously and makes sure that my children's and my communication, like intimate data, is adequately protected. And Explora also uses that as a selling point in their marketing. There's this statement from their CEO from back when Apple announced that you would be able to use Apple Watches for children as well. And then Explora published this post on their website where they say that they are very skeptical about how a big company like Apple might use this data, like the sensitive data from our children's activities. And that then by contrast, at Explora, they had the strictest security and transparency standards to ensure that this highly sensitive data is not misused and doesn't get into the wrong hands. So that's a big claim. That's a nice narrative. I think this is not the conference where we buy into vendor narratives. So when Explora started a big physical advertising campaign in my hometown, I got kind of curious. And I thought, someone should look into this. And so I bought one of these watches, the one I'm wearing right now, and I handed this off to a student of mine who did his master's thesis on a comprehensive security analysis of this device. So I handed this to Malte and said, hey, Malte, dig into this thing, see what you can find, see how we can break this. Now, Malte, unfortunately, can't be here today, so you'll have to stick with me for the technical details of this. But a very good starting point for when someone just hands you a device and says, break this, turns out to be compliance reports. Because everything that has an antenna in it, if you want to sell it in the US, for example, you need FCC approval, and these FCC reports are publicly accessible on the internet. And that includes things like photos of the hardware. So we have external photos. We also have photos of the main board, so we could start seeing which chips and debug ports are on there. But what we found was this. This is a picture of the charger that comes with the watch. And this made us kind of curious, because the charger that we had in the box looked different. That one has only two pins. So clearly what is in the report here is some sort of internal development charger that has four pins and presumably runs some sort of protocol like USB over that. And then in the finished consumer version, we remove these pins and we only have power and ground for charging. And so what we did, logically, is we Frankensteined together something that we could clamp onto the back of the watch to connect to all four of these pins. And if you plug that into your computer at this point, this will actually be recognized as a USB device, which is cool, but doesn't really get us anything yet. We can't access any data. We can't pull anything from it. And so at this point, Malte and I started thinking, and we were like, OK, how do we approach this? Can we get a firmware image from somewhere? Do we have to desolder the flash chip and dump the content? And then at one point, we were like, wait, what's the dumbest possible solution that could work here? And so do you know how you enable developer mode on an Android phone? You tap the version number in the settings a bunch of times. And so we tried that, and that worked. And that got us this secret menu pin entry screen. And now again, of course, I start thinking, how do we brute force this? Can we hook up a USB keyboard to this and kind of automate this in a rubber ducky type fashion? And I'm thinking and thinking and thinking. And meanwhile, Malte is going home and he's sitting down for 2 hours and he's typing in every single four-digit pin. And that worked. And now we have this screen where we can just flip the switch and say, yes, USB debugging, that sounds great. And once we do that, this watch behaves exactly like any Android device. So we can use ADB. I can mirror the screen of the watch to my laptop, and I can also browse the file system. Now, we don't have root on this, but the access that we do have is enough to pull all of the Explorer-defined custom apps from the device onto our laptop, and then we can use standard reverse engineering tools to take them apart. And so that's what Malte did next, right? He's sifting through this giant pile of decompiled Java code and analyzing these internal vendor-specific apps that power the features like the chat and the location tracking and everything that's happening on this watch. And then over the next couple of weeks, what kind of crystallized was a structure that looks like this. So we have the phone with a parents app on the one end, and that's talking over HTTPS to some API server. And then we also have the watch, which is also talking to another API server over HTTPS, but is also receiving notifications over a messaging protocol called MQTT. I think quite a few of you may be familiar with that. And that's being provided by AWS IoT Core. So this is an AWS service that they offer. And if with this understanding, we look a bit deeper into what's going on there, we can see one request that kind of stands out. And that's this request to an init endpoint. And that's being called a lot. Basically, before any API call, we will see an init call. And so we figure that this is related to authentication. And this is how we receive short-lived tokens to authenticate our requests to the server. If we look at these parameters and headers that are being set there, there's a lot of them that look kind of high entropy, random, encrypted. And if we squint our eyes enough, that might look like security. So we can see right off the bat, we have a timestamp in there. And then the blue thing that I partly censored here is a static secret that's just found in the firmware. And these other three things come from three different functions that we can look into next. So I have two of them on the slide here. And already at first glance, this is not looking great, right? Every time you see MD5 in an application, that's usually not a good sign. But so essentially, we can find out that this get email secret function is basically just taking a timestamp and the email and hashing it together. And the encrypt email function does some mental gymnastics to encrypt that with another static secret. But if we annotate that into our bigger picture request, we'll find out that we actually can reduce all of these blobs to more or less publicly accessible information. Right? We have timestamps in there. We have two different static secrets that we can find in the firmware. And then the email, so like the serial number of the watch also plays a role, but that can be easily enumerated. And so we are now in a position where we, as an attacker, could forge such an init request for an arbitrary watch, basically. What does that get us? Well, the response looks like this. And that has API keys in it that we can use to authenticate further requests from this watch. And it also has certificates and a topic name that we can use to access the MQTT service. And with this data, we can more or less do anything that the real watch could do. That's good, but I think it's much nicer to actually see what we can do here instead of just imagining it. So let's go back into our witch's hut and see how we can use our newfound knowledge. Well, first of all, this might be very useful for communication. So what we can do is we can actually read the message history for any given watch, so we can see what the parents and the children are talking about. And then we can also send our own messages to let the parents know that their child won't be home for a bit. So that's a good start. Next up, it might also be good to let the children know where to find us, right? Because they are so busy always looking at their phone, they won't find the forest anymore. And so this is a bit hacky. This is not intended to work this way because we can only do what the watch can do and not what the parents app can do. But through some trickery, we can actually get an instant messaging notification onto the child's watch with a text that we define. All right, so that's a good start. Now, one of these problems with these watches is that they always let the parent know where their child is, right? And so one other spell that we could work here is teleportation. And so we can just use this nice GUI interface MQTT client, plug in the certificates that we got from the API response, and then when the parent requests a location update, we copy a push ID from an MQTT message that we find there, we paste that into our exploit, and this is not going to work on the first try, but on the second try it will be. And now suddenly, our child is no longer in Darmstadt, it is instead standing next to the grave of the Soviet soldier in Pyongyang, North Korea. And then finally, we can do some power cycling. It turns out that we can remotely initiate a factory reset for any given watch. This doesn't look very interesting on screen, but if I just send this custom MQTT message, you'll see that the watch here will start to shut down, and then the window is just going to close. There we go. So, stepping out of our witch's role here for a second, this is bad. This is very bad. What we have here is essentially one for loop away from reading the messages, getting the contacts, sending spam to, sending threats to parents, teleporting children to Pyongyang for all of the other watches that use this model and this static key. And that's a lot of watches. And there's some other small stuff that Malte found in his thesis that I won't have the time to go into here today, but there's stuff about the firmware update process, there's stuff about SMS handling and so on. So there's a lot of things that are wrong here. And that gets us to the fun part of the talk, which is trying to get the vendor to listen to us and to actually fix their shit. Now, luckily, Explora has a vulnerability disclosure program. This is actually, or it was, linked under a wrong title on their website, so you had to like try all the links and eventually you'll find it. And then if you send an email there, no one's going to reply to you, at least until a week before the talk. So what we do instead is we actually go through the customer support. We send a very long customer support ticket. And to their credit, the customer support responds rather quickly and says, OK, yes, we got this. We forwarded this to the correct internal team. And then a few months go by, and we check in again and say, hey, how's this going? And at this point, they tell us that they can't engage in a coordinated disclosure process at that time. So we're just like, OK, we'll give them a bit of time and leave them to work at it. And then in August, we noticed that there is a new firmware update available for our watch. So presumably, cool, this is fixed, job done. Let's look inside, though. And so I'm sitting in my office, and I have this watch that has the update firmware button on there. And I'm thinking, OK, if I press this button, what are the odds that that's just going to brick my device, that they're going to change the pin that Malte brute force, and I really don't want to do that again. So I figured, hey, we currently have debug access to this watch. So what if I just install my own app? And my app is very simple. My app is essentially three lines of code that will manually spawn this debug menu thing without the pin protection. And then I feel safe enough to do the firmware update, and wouldn't you know it, the pin doesn't work anymore. But we have prepared for this, And so now I can just launch my my nice custom app, and we have access again. And now we can once again pull the firmware and compare it and see what changed. And it turns out that this pin thing, yeah, that's the only thing that changed. So, in the new firmware, we have this get password function, which is what generates the pin for the debug menu. I've heavily censored it here, but what you can see is there is now 6 different calls to this string builder append function. So the pin that we need now has 6 digits instead of 4, and we are also getting locked out after 3 incorrect tries. So good that we installed this app, but all our exploits continue to work without any modification. They didn't even rotate the credentials. So at this point, we are a bit tired of going through customer support, so we turn to the BSI to help kind of navigate this communication issue with the vendor. They are very helpful in that process. Shout out to the BSI. And they get back to us in October and November, telling us that Explorer is indeed working on a new authentication mechanism and that the update is rolling out. Then an update is released on October 25th. And in preparation for this talk here, I figured, hey, I should probably look at this before I give the talk. And, well, they changed some stuff, but with 2 changes to the code base in our exploit, we can still make all the exploits work again. So we are back talking to the BSI again. And, well, what we hear now is that there is going to be an update available in January 2026. But to kind of bring in a different perspective again, I just want to say I really want to believe in this. I want this cool, independent European company. And I want them to have great security. But for that, we need to see significant security culture changes for Explorer and for other manufacturers, I guess. But it turns out that getting some attention onto this really helps, because just a week before this talk, Explorer finally found my email again, and we are now in actual direct contact, which is great. Thank you, Explorer, for that. I like talking to you. So I actually had a call with the people from Explorer on December 22nd, where we discussed this and we talked all about this. And I now do believe that the update that they are planning to roll out in January will actually fix the root cause behind all this, which is nice. And I did get the impression that they do care about this stuff and they are trying to fix it. We also, this is the part of the presentation that I revised a lot because it kept changing as new things kept happening, but Explorer has now updated their vulnerability disclosure program, so it's now correctly linked on their website. They also have some, I don't know if that's public yet, but they have new tiers of actual bug bounty amounts that they're going to pay out. And I'm very happy to say that my student Malte is going to receive quite a decent payout for this work that he did from Explorer. And they are also very open to more security research. And I think with the protocols and the proper handling of vulnerability disclosure now hopefully in place, this would be a cool thing for some of you to look into, because maybe there's more. There's other devices that work in different ways. And maybe you can find something and make this a little more secure. Now, in the meantime, until January 2026, when this will hopefully all be fixed, well, remember that we have debug access on the watch currently. We can just run our own apps on there. And so, if you, right now, want to securely communicate with your child, well, we have a way to do that. We know how this works. So this is an actual Signal APK running on a children's smartwatch. I had to divide all of the DP size values by 10 to make this like barely fit on the screen. But you can technically run Signal on your child's smartwatch, which I think is very cool. And the takeaway message there being, we can work with the vendors to make stuff more secure, but we don't have to. We can also just do our own thing and make stuff more secure in our own way, because we know how to do this. Thank you.
So,
also, please do check out Malte. He did most of the research on this. He found all the cool vulnerabilities. I put a link to his LinkedIn if you want to connect, if you have some opportunities for him. I am not a LinkedIn person, but do check him out. He did really good work here.
Yeah, thanks you for the talk. And now we have mics in this in the hall, so please, if you have a question, I think mic 4.
Hi, thanks. Do I understand correctly that the debug features are still locked behind a pin that is the same across all smartwatches?
The debug feature is locked behind the pin. The pin actually differs between smartwatches. The pin is somehow dynamically calculated. I have a beautiful tool where you can generate the pin for your watch, but before the update is out, that would be putting a lot of children in danger. So at some point, if you want to unlock your Explorer watch, send me a message, I'll send you a pin.
Thanks.
Do we have any more questions also from the internet? Yes, then from the internet, please.
The internet wants to know if, or tracking children seems to be a shady business to begin with. Have you looked at other products in this space? The internet suspects them to be equally bad.
That's a very interesting question. So in this children's smartwatch market, I want to say there's like two levels of products. There is glorified GPS trackers on a wrist. That's the kind of stuff that you can pick up on Amazon for like 20 euros or something. Those are just going to be the same hardware that you would find in any other shady GPS tracker, and those tend to be horrible in terms of security. But then you also have this other tier of actual smartwatches for children that also have features that go beyond just tracking your child. And in this space, the watches get much more expensive. So you pay similar prices for an entry-level Apple Watch compared to these children's smartwatches. An Explorer watch without a contract is going to cost you like 200 euros or something. And in that space, there's much fewer vendors. So there's Explorer that's really big. You can technically use an Apple Watch for your child. They also have features to support that. And then there's some watches also from Garmin and from Fitbit or Google. And I am assuming that for these established vendors, which have a much longer history in this embedded device, IoT device, smartwatch space, that security is going to be better. But we don't know. Maybe we should find out.
Okay, thank you. Then mic number 4, please.
What do you think about a company claiming we don't trust Apple, let's use Amazon, and then not implementing some kind of end-to-end encryption for using GPS?
Mm-hmm. Yes, great question, thank you. I don't want to blame them for using AWS, because everyone does, right? And if you do it well, you can build secure products on AWS. So, I mean, sure, ideally host your own servers or whatever, but I don't blame them for that. But I did also find it funny that they have this blog post that in hindsight didn't age too well, where they criticize Apple. Because I've done a lot of research on Apple and on the Apple Watch before, and that's an entirely different level of thought that is being put into the cryptographic protocols and the security of all this. So that is kind of ironic, but I do get the general vibe of saying, hey, we are not a big tech corporation. Apple kind of is, so maybe you distrust Apple and you want to go to a smaller corporation that is more trustworthy and only does one thing and ideally does it well. I can see the sentiment behind that.
Okay, then mic free, please.
Yeah, I wasn't so familiar with those smartwatches, but I just Googled them and found out that they also have a microphone through which the parents can listen in on their children. And I was wondering if you also try to hijack that.
Yes, well, I have to clarify there that this is that listening feature that the researchers from Mnemonic were also able to activate. That, at the time, made the watch illegal to sell in Europe, so now Explora is very clear that they do not have this function. As a parent, you cannot listen in on your child. I know that a lot of the cheaper, glorified GPS tracker smartwatches, they may have a feature like that, and they don't care about being technically legal to sell in Europe. But yes, the watch has a camera and a microphone, but as far as we know, there's not really a way to access that remotely because essentially this is an Android phone on a wrist. So access to this microphone and the camera would follow the same restrictions that an Android phone has as an intuition.
Okay, and the Signal Angel has another question.
Yeah, kind of a follow-up. While talking to the BSI, did I tell you something about if they want to look into child toys more generally because they often have those flaws?
You mean if the BSI is going to look into that?
Yeah, in a general perspective.
Okay, thank you. No, not that I know. Like we only turn to the BSI to to mediate in this single vulnerability disclosure, which is a service that they offer to security researchers.
Okay, thank you. Then mic two, please.
What are the terms and conditions of the bug bounty program? Because I couldn't find it online.
The link has changed since it was... like the link that I had in the slide was the old one. You will find it on their German website in the footer section, I think, if you look. The terms and conditions are... To me, they read rather standard. It's like something about not disclosing the vulnerability until they had an opportunity to fix it and so on. There's nothing super out of the ordinary in there, but I also haven't read them that closely.
Okay, then mic number four.
Yeah, thanks for your talk. If I understand it correctly, the authentication is based on the email. So if they now change the firmware and close the access, is it still possible for you to connect to the server as a smartwatch and do some changes or some things?
Can you rephrase that, please?
Okay. If I understand correctly,
yes.
The authentication between the watch and the server is based on the email.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So even if they still close now the firmware on all of the watches in the world, but you can still access the server?
Okay, I get what you mean. That's a good question. So in the updates that we have observed so far, they did a sort of staged rollout of the firmware, where once a watch has updated and contacted the server with a new firmware, the server will remember that this watch has a new firmware and will only use the updated authentication protocols with that watch. So once a watch updates and they actually fix the underlying issue and don't only rely on the email anymore, you can't access it. And currently the problem was that if you still have debug access on the watch, you can just grab the new keys from the new firmware and then the exploit works again. But if they move to a model where every watch actually has its own keys, that will no longer be possible.
Thanks.
Then mic number two, please.
Yeah, I have one question. So you're from Norway, you live in Europe, and why do you turn to the BSI? Actually, just to get to the BSI Hall of Fame, or
no,
why?
No. The Hall of Fame is not that glamorous. I've seen it. No, I live and work in Germany. I have no particular connection to Norway, although I lived for a couple of months quite close to the Explora headquarters in Oslo, it turns out, but that doesn't have any impact on the research.
Okay.
Then please, mic number three.
Yeah. In this talk, you went over things in the watch itself. Did you or Malte look at the mobile app at all?
Mm-hmm. Malte did also look at the mobile app. From what I recall, we didn't find any super significant vulnerabilities there. I haven't read it in a bit, but I think the authentication there looked much more like a standard sort of OAuth protocol, and nothing obviously wrong with that.
Okay. Thank you.
So, if there are no further questions, then I think we can thank Niels again.